I stood and walked on. There was little noise except for the wind blowing gently along the half-kilometer-wide cleft. I realized that I could hear the soft sound of the river far below. The path curved left, around a section of cliff and ended. I stepped out onto a broad apron of gently descending stone and stared. I believe I made the sign of the cross without thinking. Because this ledge ran due north and south for 100-meter cut of cliff, I could look due west along a 30-kilometer slash of cleft to open sky where the plateau ended. I realized at once that the setting sun would illuminate this slab of cliff wall under the overhang each evening. It would not have surprised me if, on the spring or autumn solstice, Hyperion's sun would, from this vantage point, appear to set directly into the cleft, its red sides just touching the pink-toned rock walls. I turned left and stared at the cliff face. The worn path led across the wide ledge to doors carved into the vertical slab of stone. No, these were not merely doors, they were portals. Intricately carved portals with elaborate stone casements and lintels. To either side of these twin doors spread broad windows of stained glass, rising at least 20 meters toward the overhang. I went closer and inspected the facade. Whoever had built this had done so by widening the area under the overhang, slicing a sheer, smooth wall into the granite of the plateau, and then tunneling directly into the cliff face. I ran my hand over the deeply cut folds of ornamental carving around the door. Smooth. Everything had been smoothed and worn and softened by time, even here, hidden away from most of the elements by the protective lip of overhang. How many thousands of years had this temple been carved into the south wall of the cleft? The stained glass was neither glass nor plastic, but some thick, translucent substance that seemed as hard as the surrounding stone to the touch. Nor was the window a composite of panels. The colors swirled, shaded, melded, and blended into one another like oil on water. I removed my flashlight from the pack, touched one of the doors, and hesitated as the tall portal swung inward with frictionless ease. I entered the vestibule. There is no other word for it. Crossed the silent 10-meter space and paused in front of another wall made from the same stained glass material that even now glowed behind me, filling the vestibule with thick light of 100 subtle hues. I realized instantly that at the sunset hour, the direct rays of the sun would fill this room with incredibly deep shafts of color, would strike the stained glass wall in front of me, and would illuminate whatever lay beyond. I found the single door, outlined by thin, dark metal, set into the stained glass stone, and I passed through it. On Pachem we have, as best we could from ancient photos and hollows, rebuilt the Basilica of St. Peter's exactly as it stood in the ancient Vatican. Almost 700 feet long and 450 feet wide, the church can hold 50,000 worshippers when His Holiness says Mass. We have never had more than 5,000 faithful there, even when the Council of Bishops of all the worlds is in assembly every 43 years. In the central apse near our copy of Bernini's Throne of St. Peter, the great dome rises more than 130 meters above the floor of the altar. It is an impressive space. This space was larger. In the dim light, I used the beams of my flashlight to ascertain that I was in a single great room. A giant hall, hollowed out of solid stone. I estimated that the smooth walls rose to a ceiling that must be only a few meters beneath the surface of the crag where the Bikura had set their huts. There was no ornamentation here, no furniture, no sign of any concession to form or function, except for the object that sat squarely in the center of this huge, echoing cave of a room. Centered in the great hall was an altar. a 5-meter square slab of stone left when the rest was hollowed out. And from this altar rose a cross. 4 meters high, 3 meters wide, carved in the old style of the elaborate crucifixes of old earth. The cross faced the stained glass wall as if awaiting the sun and the explosion of light that would ignite the inlaid diamonds, sapphires, blood crystals, lapis beads, queen's tears, onyxes, and other precious stones that I could make out in the light of the flashlight as I approached. I knelt and prayed. Shutting off the flashlight, I waited several minutes before my eyes could discern the cross in the dim, smoky light. This was, without a doubt, the cruciform of which the Bikura spoke. And it had been set here a minimum of many thousands of years ago, perhaps tens of thousands, long before mankind first left old earth, almost certainly before Christ taught in Galilee. I prayed.